Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Hi.
Here's John Williams.
There we go.
This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here today till 3. Don't forget, on social media, you can play with us, too. I'm WGN King John there, WGN King John. We start the show during the holidays with holiday clips.
Party at your house tonight?
Yes, I should say.
You probably have some guests?
No, Mr. Matuchek. Just my wife, my boy, my little baby, and myself. That's all we want, and we are very happy.
Yeah. Well, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Matuchek.
Mr. Matuchek, I don't know how to thank you for that marvelous present. After all, I'm only working here a short time.
Oh, that's all right. What was your name?
Rudy.
Rudy. How old are you, Rudy?
17.
17, that's a wonderful age. You've got your whole life ahead of you. But it's up to you what you make of it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, now, you better not squander that money. You take it home and give it to your mother, huh?
My people don't live here in town, Mr. Matuchek.
Is that so? Have you no other relations here?
No, Mr. Matuchek.
You mean you're all alone in Budapest on Christmas Eve?
That's right.
Rudy, do you like chicken noodle soup?
I certainly do, Mr. Matuchek.
Yeah, and what would you think of roast goose stuffed with baked apples and fresh boiled potatoes and butter and some red cabbage on the side, huh?
I'd love it.
Yeah, and then some cucumber salad with sour cream.
Oh, Mr. Matuchek.
And then a double order of apple strudel with vanilla sauce.
Sounds wonderful.
Yes, well, you're going to have it, Rudy. Come on, here, taxi!
.11 now. So that one is the suggestion of producer Griffin, who works with us on Saturdays, and he said, why are you doing all the obvious ones? You look at any list of the top 10 scenes from Christmas movies and TV shows, and they're all Elf, The Grinch, and Christmas Vacation. I saw a list of 10, and 6 or 7 of them were from those three movies. He said, do a movie that has a great Christmas scene. Doesn't even have to be a Christmas movie. That's from Shop Around the Corner. That's an old film. Jimmy Stewart's in that movie, and it's about Mr. Matuchek's shop, and everybody that works there hates each other. They end up discovering each other in a fun way, and I think that movie's been remade a couple of times, but that's the original, and what a nice scene. You know, Mr. Matuchek, you listen to that, and you're thinking, okay, what's going on here?
I kept waiting for it to turn.
It doesn't. It's funny. That's what we've done. But back then, he wanted to celebrate Christmas with somebody. And he was offering it to the employees as they exited, but they all had plans. And finally, this young 17-year-old boy alone in the city who's working in his shop and grateful for a day's pay said, I'm alone. And he said, how about a goose? And by that, he meant, how about a goose? In fact, Griffin's list is, I'm like, really, Griff?
So I was going to say, it's so Griffin?
It's so Griffin. I'm like, oh, couldn't we just do Grinch? Can't we just do Charlie Brown, for crying out loud?
How's his movie A Day resolution going now that we're winding down the year?
Yeah, we're in the last month. Griffin's plan in January was to watch 365 films this year, and he's fallen woefully short. He'll come in somewhere around 175.
That's okay. A fail.
It's close.
That's one every other day.
Couch potato watches that many. This takes no effort.
You know what? Every time we get to this conversation, we don't that often, but when it's come up, I think, how do you answer to what a waste of time that you watch a movie a day? But when you think about the screen time Americans have, 6 or 7 hours a day, this is a person who doesn't have regular television. So when he goes to the cinema or when he finds a way to watch it on Hulu or on demand or however you all are watching movies these days, 2 hours is not a lot. Do you know somebody who plays an hour of video games a day? Stuff like that. So if you say, okay, if that's what you're doing, do whatever you want.
I get bored really fast from watching a screen.
I can't sit in a sofa for more than a half an hour.
Without playing solitaire. That's my problem.
I do a puzzle. You know, we've got this one like Christmas puzzle on the table in front of the TV. I'm doing the dishes, and then I get up and I walk around. I that's more about me.
You ever see the movie Merry Christmas? This would be a Griffin one. Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence.
I don't know if I have.
David Bowie and Tim Conti and their prisoners of war in
exactly.
Japan.
There you go. And if there's a Christmas scene in that flick, then...
Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. Merry Christmas.
You know, when we went back to A Christmas Story, the scene in the Chinese restaurant where they sing fa ra 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 ra, it's really funny in the movie, and it's still funny in 2018, but now I'm nervous about playing that culturally inappropriate, funny scene. So I'm not sure if that one's going to make our cut or not.
Yeah, it's kind of like, what's her name, talking about blackface.
Yeah, right.
What was her name again?
I remember the conversation. I don't remember.
Megyn Kelly.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Well, it's not. Hopefully that won't befall us.
Well, give it a try. Play it, John. See what happens.
All right. So if you've got suggestions, scenes for movies or TV shows, we've been featuring them. 312-981-7200. You can call or text and leave them there. Packers fan asks judge to order Bears to let him wear Green Bay gear on the Soldier Field sidelines. Kevin happens to be in a little earlier than normal today, I think. I'm not sure when Kevin normally gets in, but I see him in Sportsland. Hey, throw a rock at him. He said he'd jump on with us on this, too. But what do you make of this? So it's basically this. There's this guy named Russell Beckman. He is a social studies and special education teacher. He's in his mid-50s. He's a Packers fan, but he's got season tickets to the Bears game. And for the last few years, he's been wearing his Packers jersey to the Bears game. When you are a season ticket holder, and they have a points system so that you acquire enough points, you get perks. And one of the perks is that you get to stand on the sideline with the team during the warm-ups before the game. He goes down there in his Packers stuff. He did it for a couple of years. And this year he said, hey, I'm going to bring some friends too. And the Bears are like, not only you, but now your friends wearing Packers stuff. They told him that he would not be allowed to do it. He's been suing the team. This case has been going on for a couple of years. And with the upcoming Bears-Packers tilt, he wants a decision. And evidently a judge is going to give one by Friday. He has an attorney from Duke representing him, an attorney from Chicago representing him. They say it's a First Amendment issue. A fan gets to wear the clothing they want, as long as it's, I guess, not patently offensive. They say since it's a municipally owned stadium, it's different than if it's a private stadium. So he says he has a First Amendment right to wear that, and the Bears are like, shut up. And the Bears' argument is, just shut up, go away. My question to you is, if you're the Bears, do you let the guy wear his Packers jersey on the sideline of the Bears game? Kevin, your thoughts, go.
Why are some people so annoying, Jen?
I know, that's the thing. I'm like,
why does he want to be on Soldier Field? He's just being a troll and he's being annoying. Go away.
If I'm the judge, I go, I find that you have a First Amendment right to do it, but I'm going to deny you that right because you are annoying.
Well, I thought you said he was a Packers fan, right?
Yeah. He is, which makes him,
a little redundant.
A little redundant. That's a good point, Steve. I just don't get it. I mean, I don't know, because I just keep seeing this story pop up over the past few years, and I go, why?
Okay, here's
do you want to be on Soldier Field in all your Packers gear? And he's not just in a Packers jersey, folks. Look up a picture. He looks like a Packer fan.
He's got the necklaces around, and he paints his beard Packer colors. He says this, I believe the ownership will lose in the courtroom since they operate a taxpayer-owned stadium, and this rule is contrary to the public interest. I am a fan of the NFL. I want the Bears-Packers rivalry to be exciting. I want Packers and Bears games to mean something. If you're a fan of something, you want to claim it. Booyah!
It already means something.
I understand that whole thing. If you're talking about Civil War statues or Confederate flags or civil rights, there's a lot of things that I think we can all jump into. But I can't get vested in your argument about the meaning of the Packers-Bears game. To the degree that it's a First Amendment issue. I don't know what the right ruling on this is. I don't know what the law, how we should interpret the law, but I don't want to give this guy. I'm sure he's lovely. He's a special education
teacher. You sure about
that? He's a social studies teacher. How can you not love a social studies teacher?
But I didn't love all my social studies.
I'm like, find
teachers.
A cause. I'm like, dude, find a cause.
That's why you ended up as a sports broadcaster.
That's right. When is gym? What time do we get out of here?
See, this is a case of one of those things where you just let the 3-year-old act out and don't let it bother you, and then it will be over.
Oh, you mean let him wear his thing and don't even shine a light on it?
Right. And we would have never known this.
Well, I wonder, so if any of the Bears, like, who is this offending? Except that it's a little embarrassing to the organization. Have other Bears fans complained?
Did you see the Giants game?
I don't know what you're talking about.
That was a little embarrassing to the organization, and that matters.
I got a First Amendment right to you guys winning.
Right. 3-8 or 4-8 or whatever they were.
Yeah, they were 3-8 going in. The Giants were. Okay. Let's pick up a couple of phone lines because, you know, that's what we do. Lori, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hey, how are you, John?
Talk to us. What do you want to say?
I'm not even really a football fan, but I was listening to this, and the guy's just being a jerk. I mean, come on, be a sportsman.
Bingo.
He's wearing his jersey, and he's taunting the team. I mean, you know, it's all about attitude and about giving good vibes, and this guy is purposely being a child. Yeah. You know, go back in the stands, wear your whatever you're going to wear, but, you know, it's about being a sportsman. You know, this is the Bears. This is their home turf. I think it's absolutely childish and a waste of the judicial system, to be honest with you.
You're not an attorney, are you?
No, my daughter's an attorney. That's my only connection.
It's funny because as you speak, my sister's an attorney. Your voice is a dead ringer for my sister. I thought this was my sister
really?
Calling in, and you're not Mary, are you?
No, I'm Laura.
Yeah, right. You're Laura. You're Mary, aren't you?
I'm not Mary. Really, there's another person that has my voice. Okay. No, I think it's ridiculous. I think there's a time and a place. Yes, he has a First Amendment right, but you know what? Let's get in the spirit. You know, quit being a jerk.
Do you have brown hair and 2 kids?
Well, I have brown hair and I do have 2 kids.
Yeah, this is
one's an attorney.
This is my son.
And one's a rocket scientist. I have a son that's a rocket scientist.
Are you serious?
He works for SpaceX.
Oh, my God. My sister's 2 kids, and my sister has brown hair. She has 2 kids, but they're, you know, in grade school or junior high.
No,
junior
I've got older
high
children.
High school, but I
get older children.
Wow. You know, I would just come up to strangers on the street and say, hi, my name's Laura. My son's a rocket scientist. And then I would just
he
move
is.
On.
He is. I'm a rocket scientist. You heard of soccer moms and hockey moms. I'm a rocket scientist mom. And he is a pretty, I can't tell you what he does, but it's a pretty darn big job. And I'm very proud of him. I'm proud of my daughter, too, as a lawyer. So
I would get that on a shirt. I would get that on a shirt. Rocket scientist mom. Thanks for the call, Laura.
Okay.
Happy days to you, rocket scientist mom. Is that a shirt you can get? Rocket scientist mom?
Can make it happen.
Ask me about my rocket scientist son.
I can't tell you much.
I know, but yeah. I can't tell you. We'd have to, you know.
Interesting. I can't tell you about my rocket scientist.
There you go. Don't even ask me. The news click today, our daily web poll question to WGNradio.com is going to ask you about this Packers fan who wants to wear his Packers gear on the sideline of Bears games. A judge will decide, I hear, tomorrow. Yesterday, we asked you, this week, remembering George H.W. Bush has A, made me hopeful about America, B, made me indifferent about the state of the state, or C, made me a little sad that that time has passed. Producer Elif, what percentage said that they are hopeful after this week, remembering George Bush?
32%, John.
And then how many said we are indifferent about it after this week?
4%, John.
Oh. Okay, this is sad. What percentage, then, are we left with that made me sad that that time, that era has passed?
63%, John.
Sorry about that. The new news click is going to be about the Packers jersey. Hey, Glenn, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Hey, John. I think when you started the conversation talking about First Amendment rights, I believe one of the things you said that would not be allowed is if it's violently offensive or something to that order.
Patently, yeah.
And I think that would be. He'd be subject to getting pelted by whatever fans have with him, whether it's beer or food or and people around him who would be subjected to it.
You know, actually, you may be onto something there. I mean, maybe the judge can say, I don't know about the First Amendment, but this is a safety issue. We're just not going to let you allow
right.
that because it'll end badly for somebody, right?
Right. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Glenn, I'm glad you're listening. Thank you for the call.
Okay.
Have a good day. Casey, jump in there. What do you want to say? You're on WGN.
Hi, John. I kind of agree with your last caller. It is a First Amendment issue. I believe that he will win, not the Bears. But if he does win, the Bears can take a chair or three chairs, you know, if he has three other friends, and set them on the back of the sidelines. And then once they sit down, they have to stay seated because of safety issues. And then you put a screen around the back of the chairs so nobody can see them. Then you have all the large players stand in front of them. That takes care of everything.
Kind of like what the Ricketts did to the right field rooftops, right? You can go ahead and, if you want to, you go ahead and put your bleachers up there.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. We're just going to put a screen in front. Oh, sorry. Yeah, ooh, wow. Don't know what to tell you.
Casey,
isn't that too bad for you?
When I get to be King Casey, you will be in charge of Soldier Field, just so you know.
Oh, you da bomb, John.
Thanks for the call. It's 128. I wonder what Bill Daly says about all of this. He's in the PPG green room, and he's running for mayor.
He's Bears all the way.
Yeah. Boy, this is an easy one. If he comes in and goes,
this is
well,
a softball for him,
if
John.
I think the Packers, they're people too.
Let me hit you with the hot topic here. Bears versus Packers. Who you got?
In our studio now is Bill Daly. He's been a guest of this show before. I guess he's been a guest of most of our shows. And he is also running for mayor. His new ad is out. He's talking property taxes in that ad. We'll get to all of that in just a minute. Bill, welcome back. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm doing well, thank you.
You were at the National Cathedral yesterday.
Yes, my wife and I were there, and it was quite a moving state funeral for President Bush. Really reflected the best of America. And the Bush family and the way the entire service was laid out was a great tribute to their father.
Were you Commerce Secretary for him?
I was Commerce Secretary, but that's one of the first times he called me one day. Called my office, and my secretary came in and said, I think I hung up on President Bush. I said, what do you mean? She said, some guy was on the phone and said it was President Bush. He called back. He was in Maine, and the lobster fishermen had asked him to help on a problem they had that was in the Commerce Department. So that began a long, many conversations, meetings. He was a very kind and generous guy.
So then, with all due respect, how close were you? How did you actually get a ticket to the funeral?
He obviously put me on the list, my wife and I. I visited with him in Maine a couple of years ago when we were vacationing there.
So you maintained a friendship over the years.
We maintained communications. I've got some great notes from him over the years. He was a great note writer.
Evidently.
But just that greatest generation who really sacrificed in their lives. They believed in country, faith, values, character, government, public service. And his family's have been an exemplar in their public service.
So a lot of us have been talking on and off the air about all elements of what yesterday was like, and literally, how do they do that? They must have been planning it in advance, and then tickets are issued? Is that how it goes?
Yeah, the family decides who comes. There are certain, the ambassadors are there, I think all 50 governors may have been invited, because it is a state funeral. But the military drives the process of planning, and they approach the ex-presidents shortly after they leave office.
Oh, really?
And begin the process.
Really?
Yeah. So obviously it's been almost 30 years for President Bush. So a lot of thought went into it, and down to the moment it's planned.
It was magnificent on TV.
Yeah, it was quite moving in person. Saw lots of people that have played major roles in the history of America and the world. But he really is the last of the global leaders of that generation.
Hmm. The subtext was, and when W spoke, he didn't speak to the current president or administration, but the subtext was the contrast.
Mm-hmm.
Were you all feeling that they were saying goodbye not only to Bush, but maybe to an era?
Oh, I think there's no doubt that there was a goodbye to an era. And it wasn't focused on Trump. President Trump, there are lots of other things that have gone on over the last number of years in our body politic that are not attractive and are kind of contrary to what George Bush for most of his life stood for and what he tried to do. So I think there was inherent in the service was that goodbye to that generation. The Second World War, the struggles they had, even though he came from a very wealthy family. There was a certain kindness, gentleness, patriotism about him as a human being that you don't see often today in politics.
How moving was his son's eulogy?
It was quite moving because I've known them and President 43, and they are incredibly close. They adored their father. They had their differences like all do with their parents and their mother, but they were extremely, extremely close. And I'm sure the presidency drew them even closer.
This is trivial, but name drop on me then. Governors, ambassadors, obviously all the living presidents.
Prince Charles, a bunch of Peyton Manning, sports stars, Greg Norman, golfers, if you're into golf, Phil Mickelson, lots of officials from his administration and other administrations, the Senate, most members of the Senate and many leaders of the House. And just a lot of family friends and people who work with him.
Who did you tend with?
My wife and I went.
So did you kind of elbow her and go, we rate? You know, hey, what do you know?
We were truly honored. they had notified us a while ago that
really?
That they wanted our current information. So you kind of knew what they expected to be coming, and we were honored. I had many interactions with him. I've got some great memories of him, and I admired him greatly. Maybe didn't agree with all his politics all the time, but as a human being, I think that, and that's where we should start.
Yeah, that kind of buried the lead. I mean, maybe I didn't, but he's a Republican and you're a Democrat, so there's that. Yeah. I wonder what you would say then. If you were to be mayor of Chicago, would you have an attitude? How contentious would you be? How willing would you be to work across the divide? Talk about your body politic.
You know, my career has been in business. It is not. I'm not a career politician. I've never run for office before, even though I've been around politics. But I've tried to be one who tries to bring people together. And the labels of politics don't mean a lot to me if it's about getting something done. And you can't get something done unless you're willing to compromise. And so whether it was in the fight for NAFTA back in the early 90s on behalf of Bill Clinton, whether it was as Commerce Secretary when I had to work with the Republican Hill members and leadership around the country and in the business community who were mostly Republicans or political leaders around the country who were many were Republicans, I think if you want to get something done, you've got to have an attitude of we have to come together. Much of our politics today obviously is divisive, and where has that gotten us?
Bill Daley's in our studio. You got all your signatures, and you got enough signatures?
Yeah, we got our signatures in. They're good.
They're all legit.
Legit, and I look forward to engaging about the issues and the future of this city over the next 3 months.
We did a podcast today that we do on Thursdays called The Mincing Rascals. Eric Zorn, Scott Standis, Justin Kaufman, Steve and I, and we were wondering if this business of signatures is even necessary. Some of the other candidates for mayor are arguing over the legitimacy of some of those signatures. Maybe that's kind of an antiquated way to get into the mayor's race.
Well, when I filed my petitions, I said we ought to reform the system. We ought to lower the number required. I don't think it ought to be just zero. But 12,500 is a high hurdle for many people. I think we ought to encourage people to ballot access is important to Democrats. I think we ought to lower the level, the numbers, and I think we ought to allow people to sign. Technically, today, you can only sign one. And sometimes people get in a race after someone signed a petition. Well, technically, that petition, the second one you sign, is not a good signature.
Yeah,
and I think people ought to be able to, we should not be afraid of participatory democracy.
Steve Bertrand, you are or are not right next to me.
Well, sure, I am, Mr. Daley. Don't ask John how many signature or petitions he signed.
I signed them all. I'm the friendliest guy.
But so look at what's wrong with that?
And because I don't know who I'm going to vote for right now. But if somebody to me is willing to work hard enough to advocate, if one of your people came to my door on a winter's day and said, hey, will you sign this? I think I would. And then I'll figure it out,
right.
You know?
And that's the way it should be. You will decide who you will vote for later on. But to give someone the opportunity to be on the ballot, I don't see that as a big issue. And I think we ought to do that.
What do you think of this Preckwinkle strategy of challenging a lot of the signatures? You could benefit from that.
I didn't challenge anyone. We looked at a number of them, and there were some that were rather questionable. But, again, let's get on with talking about the real issues here. This is going to eat up, you know, and some people are great at the sort of process, politics, trying to catch people in a let's just talk about the future of this city.
Well, let's read this headline. Bill Daley promises property tax freeze in his first TV ad for Chicago mayor. I won't play all of it, but Elif, can you play for us a clip from Mr. Daley's first ad?
Let's get real, Chicago. Crime and taxes are up. While fancy buildings rise inside the loop, families are being driven out of our neighborhoods every day. Bill Daley has spent his whole life in Chicago. It's in his blood. He knows Chicago only thrives when all our 77 neighborhoods thrive. Bill will put a moratorium on tax hikes to keep families in their homes. And he'll make getting guns and gangs off our streets priority number one. Bill Daley for mayor. No more excuses.
Are we able to do, will the mayor actually be able to do that? Or is that read my lips, no new taxes?
No.
And then they raise taxes.
No, I've said that I will not raise property taxes.
Is that your call alone to make, though, if you're mayor?
Well, the city council can have an opinion of it, but I can also veto their, I have to put a budget together for 2020. And that will have to be without property tax increases. And if at some point in my tenure I have to raise property taxes, I will do cuts to the expenses of government before I do that. And what I'm trying to raise here, Sean, is the fact that we have got to deal with these issues at the state level. We've got a new state government coming in, a whole legislature that's totally Democratic. I've talked last week about different options on revenue and reforms on the table.
I want to get to that.
So, but we've got to call the question. But the property homeowners in Chicago, when they get their taxes next June based upon new assessments, are going to be shocked at their tax increases. And we cannot keep pounding on them.
Okay, so marijuana?
Yeah, put it on the table. Marijuana, casinos.
Legalize it recreationally, and then we'll take the tax revenue from that. Casinos we've already got, but you want the city to operate one?
Well,
or how would that work?
There's been, I believe a casino in Chicago must be considered. I think that ought to be on the table. Marijuana, commuter tax, real estate transfer tax, and reforms.
Talk to me about the last thing, I hear you, but we could do the whole show on reforming the pension system. Talk to me about how a commuter tax would work.
Well, I don't have a plan that I've laid out. I've said we ought to look at it, see where it's worked.
But typically means if you work in the suburbs, and you work in the city, you're not paying our property taxes, therefore you should pay some sort of stipend to work in the city.
Right.
Does the employer typically pay that, or would that come out of my paycheck?
Well, to be honest with you, I have not laid out a plan, whether it's comes out of your paycheck or the employer pays it. But many of the people, obviously, who come in from the suburbs into the city enjoy the benefits of the cost of the city.
I'm with you on that, but here's my worry for you.
It's on the table.
But is the city in a position of power on that? I mean, would that just encourage a business to say, fine, we'll go to DuPage?
Well, they may, but I think we've got to talk about these things. I'm not saying I'm for it, but if we're going to try to solve our long-term fiscal problems, all of these things, there are some people who believe it's just about revenue. Just go raise property taxes. To me, that's a non-starter right now, okay? And others will say, just raise all the other taxes.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, if we're going to deal with this in a serious way, everything's on the table, including trying to figure a way to reform the pension problem. But it must be done together. We can't just keep doing the same thing we're going to do, find a one-year fix and another year fix. And all mayors, over many years, are part of trying to kick the can down the road. And Mayor Emanuel, to his credit, has tried over the last couple of years. And they've all failed, the solutions. So, but we're at a crisis point. The truth is, the state's in worse shape than we are on this issue. So let's all join together, be adults, got a whole new state legislature, a new governor, every office holder in the state is, at the state level, is Democratic, and the legislature is overwhelmingly Democratic. So there cannot be any more excuses. We wasted 4 years, the last 4 years.
Steve, what were you thinking?
Well, as you're talking, Mr. Daly, the CTU has just endorsed Tony Preckwinkle in the race, and I just wonder how important you think that will be in the voting.
Look, I have three sisters who were teachers. My daughter was a teacher. I have enormous respect for the teachers. I get the fact that, as I read the article, President Preckwinkle basically endorsed the CTU's plan, and they endorsed her. So that's fine. That's their right. But I believe we need to have a better education system. The teachers have to be respected. They have to be dealt with. And I have enormous respect, as I stated. But, you know,
that's it's a lot of votes, right? And it's a pretty powerful union.
It is a powerful union. But I think there'll be teachers who will appreciate, hopefully, my honesty to them. And we have to quit lying to them and telling them that we could solve all these problems without some pain. And they surely know that, the individual teachers. I get the union leadership. I get what unions are about. They're politicians. They run for office, the leadership of these unions. So I get that. But I will talk to the teachers. I've already spent enormous number of hours around the city talking to teachers in settings, in homes, and in organizations, in conversations just one-on-one, and listen to their concerns, listen to what they think ought to be done. Because, again, I have enormous respect for the job they do. We expect enormous things from them.
77 neighborhoods in Chicago and 77 people running for mayor. And Bill
Daly
is one of the better-known names in the hunt. Good luck to you. Thanks for coming to our
studio
again.
Appreciate you having me.
His new campaign spot is out, and he's talking about property tax.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Here we go again.
Here's John Williams.
Start the show with another clip. We're featuring holiday scenes that you're recommending. Listen to this one differently now. This is a sweet scene that's coming your way, although it almost doesn't sound like that in parts. Here we go.
Party at your house tonight?
Yes, I should say.
You probably have some guests?
No, Mr. Matuchek. Just my wife, my boy, my little baby, and myself. That's all we want, and we are very happy.
Yeah. Well, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Matuchek.
Mr. Matuchek, I don't know how to thank you for that marvelous present. After all, I'm only working here a short time.
Oh, that's all right. What was your name?
Rudy.
Rudy. How old are you, Rudy?
17.
17, that's a wonderful age. You've got your whole life ahead of you. But it's up to you what you make of it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, now, you better not squander that money. You take it home and give it to your mother, huh?
My people don't live here in town, Mr. Matuchek.
Is that so? Have you no other relations here?
No, Mr. Matuchek.
You mean you're all alone in Budapest on Christmas Eve?
That's right.
Rudy, do you like chicken noodle soup?
I certainly do, Mr. Matuchek.
Yeah, and what would you think of roast goose stuffed with baked apples and fresh boiled potatoes and butter and some red cabbage on the side, huh?
I'd love it.
Yeah, and then some cucumber salad with sour cream.
Oh, Mr. Matuchek.
And then a double order of apple strudel with vanilla sauce.
Sounds wonderful.
Yes. Well, you're going to have it, Rudy. Come on. Here. Taxi.
Mr. Matuchek just wanted to share some Christmas joy in a shop around the corner. And couldn't find anybody working in his shop until the new hire, the kid with no family, said, I don't have any family here, and he treated him to a feast. What were you thinking?
Yeah, what do you think they were thinking?
I just think that you wonder what's up Mr. Matuchek's sleeve.
It sounds like Gene Wilder, the young guy. Like I just kept waiting for a comedy.
A
either
trick.
Something zany or, you know, I'm sorry, I've watched enough movies where then Mr. Matuchek gets him at home and, you know, there's a torture dungeon or he's going to steal his wallet or something bad's going to happen. That wouldn't be a Christmas movie. I'm just saying that's how those scenes sometimes play out.
And what movie is this?
It's A Shop Around the Corner. It's black and white, Jimmy Stewart, 1940-something.
Is he Mr. Matuchek?
He is not. He's one of the clerks and...
So we got Mel Brooks, Gene Wilder, and Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, all kind of mashed into there.
I love love this jazz rendition of this Christmas song.
Isn't this kind of nice? Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're saying, hey, John, who is that? I'll get you the name of the... Because that whole Christmas album, it just sounds like that. It's a Christmas album of jazz music. Everything I heard was instrumental. And it all has that sort of three- or four-piece jazz combo feel, which is a real sweet spot for me. We've been talking about a number of topics on the show, and a lot of you have been texting in. Remember, if there's a movie that you want us to feature, or a TV show, a scene, it doesn't have to be a Christmas movie per se, but if it's got a Christmas scene, we'll at least give it a thought. Just call or text 312-981-7200. Remember, this person said, John, I haven't heard any scenes from Bad Santa on your show yet. What's up? I've watched Bad Santa enough. The first time my family saw it, all of us as adults, everybody loved it but me. It was just too coarse and crass for me. I'm like, you guys, this... They go, no, it has a nice ending. I said, this is too hard a journey for me to get there. I cannot enjoy that.
How about The Ref?
Yet, I love The Ref, right. And that is a little more comic, a little more palatable. But yeah, it's a rough journey to get to a happy Christmas place.
So when you were talking with Griff, we watched The Green Book, saw The Green Book this past week.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved the movie.
You said it was the best thing you've seen in a long time.
It's longer than that even. Just a great, great, great movie. Nominated as a comedy by the Golden Globes today, which is really weird. But it ends at a Christmas scene.
Oh,
right?
I haven't seen the movie yet.
Right, it ends at a Christmas... Well, I mean, there's a Christmas dinner. It's at Christmas time.
Yeah.
But it's kind of interesting. Like, this is not a Christmas movie that has a Christmas tie into it at the end.
Sure.
Which kind of limits it as a Christmas movie, right? You're not going to be as inclined to watch it in June as you would be around now.
Well, you tell me. I haven't seen the movie. I mean, the trailers I've seen show them on a summer day driving through the South, right?
That's
autumn. Is it autumn?
Yeah.
So it's really set in that time frame, huh?
Right, but it becomes, you could almost, I mean...
Have you watched the movie Diner?
Yeah.
Well, that's set around Christmas time. It's not a Christmas movie, but so many of the scenes are Christmas related.
That's a perfect example. You're right then, so there's no, I'm wrong.
It's everybody getting together in the movie Diner in the 1959, say. And it's just the interaction of all of these young people in their lives and what happens, but they all come home for Christmas. So it's not like, that's the setting. It's not Christmas themed per se, but of course there's a lot of Christmas music and background and stuff like that. Okay, 312-981-7200 if you want to forward any suggestions. About that Packer fan who's got tickets to the Bears games and wears his Packer gear on the sidelines of the Bears games. John, how can that guy afford season tickets? He's a school teacher. He's got 5 tickets. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know how anybody affords Bears tickets or season tickets to the Cubs or whatever it is you want to go to. Although my wisdom about the word afford is this. The verb that precedes it is critical. It's not can you afford it, it's will you afford it. You make a choice. If you're a school teacher, say, we don't know anything about this guy, but say he's making school teacher money. And he's 56, so maybe he's up there a little bit, but he's still making school teacher money. And he's got a handful of season tickets to the Bears games. That might not be the way you would spend your salary, but that's the way he's chosen to spend his salary. That's important to him. He's a football fan. And a lot of the people, including this guy, sell their tickets after they buy them. So if your outgo is $8,000, you're really only spending $1,500 on the games you go to, and then you're selling the rest to your friends who want the seats. John, my grandkids in Atlanta could not wear their Bears jersey on the field. They had to put something over the shirt. So these are Bears fans going to a game in Atlanta, and the Falcons would not let them wear their Bears stuff. So there's some precedent there. Huh? John, with all due respect to President Bush, Bill Daley said that he's the last of the greatest generation. President Jimmy Carter is still with us. Yep, touche. John, the city of Chicago already has a head tax charged to corporations. It's exactly what is being described as this commuter tax that Bill Daley wants. Tax the individual employees would be double taxation. I'm sorry, I'm just seeing that now. I would have run that by him. John, I have a suggestion for you, a scene from the movie you can play. Could you play a scene from the movie Polar Express? Thank you. Didn't the Nashville Preds, says 815, disallow Hawks jerseys in the front rows at their playoff games? I remember that.
Yeah, plus, isn't there always an allotment of away team tickets? So you want to keep it home-based.
Well, do you remember what the Brewers did? Because so many Packers, Cubs fans would go up and buy tickets. They want to see a Cubs game. You can't get a good seat at Wrigley. So you buy tickets at the Brewers game when the Cubs are on the road. Last year, and maybe years before, they limit the first crack at those tickets to people who are Wisconsin residents. If you are an Illinois resident, you can't even buy a ticket to the Cubs-Brewers game until after they first give it to Wisconsin people. John, the guy, this is so true, the guy with the pink baseball cap and his phone behind the Chicago Cubs home plate drives me crazy. Do you know who she's talking about or he's talking about this?
Yeah, the guy in the pink cap.
Who is that guy?
There's been a whole stories about him. And
I haven't read them, but I see him and I want to, I want him to sit up and pay attention to the game. B, I want him to take off the pink cap, even if it's breast, I don't know what the deal is, but if it's a cause, it's distracting.
I think he was a player who almost, who made a, one of the guys who made a play for the team before the Ricketts.
No kidding.
Like
a rich guy, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want him wearing the pink cap back there either.
Well, he tries to blend in.
Yeah, he does. It's 217. Did you see what Walter Jacobson is saying about Ed Burke, the legendary newsman, about the legendary alderman? Walter's going to stroll into our studio in a minute on WGN. Today's news click, producer Aleph, give that to us, please.
Should a judge let a Packers fan wear his team jersey on the sidelines of Bears games? A. Yes, the fan has a First Amendment right. B. No, the team can do whatever it wants.
Do we have any early voting results on that yet?
Checking.
Walter Jacobson is in our studio. Walter, how will you vote on that?
I'd vote for the Bears to just forget about it. Let him come on there. Stop paying attention to all that because all it does is distract from the game.
I hate to say this, but that's what Steve Bertrand said, and I dismissed it. But now that you say it, I guess I'll...
Why'd you dismiss it?
Because it came from Bertrand.
Oh, God. I'm not surprised to hear that. But so then you would say you would keep him off the field or you would let him on the field?
I would keep him off the field not because of his constitutional rights, but because he's obnoxious.
Oh, God. That's
which
great.
Which gives me poor standing, I think, legally, but that's just where my gut is on this. Aleph, do you have the results on that so far?
Yes, the fan has a First Amendment right. Option A. 63%.
63.
B. No, the team can do whatever it wants. 37%, John.
37% are saying don't allow it, and 63 are saying let the guy, he's got to be able to go on. For 45 years, you have been reporting on Ed Burke.
Yeah, I have, and it has been tiring at times and exciting most of the time.
I wonder if he says the same thing about you.
He doesn't have a very good relationship with we in the press. He's got one reporter in town that he trusts fully, and that's Mike Sneed at the Chicago Sun-Times. But mostly the political reporter, especially John Cass, me for a long time, he would not return calls. He just didn't want to get involved. He's a very forceful, as you know, extremely forceful guy. But when it comes to talking to the media, he's very reticent. I think he's afraid of what we may do because, you know, everybody in the media especially and his opponents in politics have been picking on him for 45 years.
Well, he's in the news right now because the FBI has raided his office, papered up the glass perimeter of it. We didn't know what was going on in there, but something's up, and we still don't know what the FBI is investigating.
Right.
It sounds to be political as opposed to, say, his business on the real estate side.
Well, I would guess along with you on that, because we don't know, that it's more political. And that's because I think the Justice Department loves to go after big fish. I mean, I don't think that. I know that.
Well, that makes sense, to go over the top of the food chain, not the bottom.
Of course. Although, you know, the tactics they use to get to the top of the chain sometimes bother me, but that's a separate subject.
Who are you rooting for on this one?
Well, I don't think Burke is going to be in any trouble, serious trouble. I think that Burke, I know that Burke has been subpoenaed many, many times, and he's been subject of such criticism. I don't know that they've got anything on him. He and his buddy Eddie Verdoliak, the two Eddies in the city council for so many years, have been criticized for doing things that politicians do everywhere, and maybe worse. Well, we know that Verdoliak, he's been convicted of some things like that, but they're so careful. Ed Burke is so careful. They're not going to get to him. Now, don't hold me to that, because this time they will.
You know we're on the air.
That's right.
Out there, Walter. You said that. But, you know, it's ironic, I thought, that his defense was about this investigation. Hey, I've been subpoenaed and investigated a million times, and nothing's ever stuck. And I thought, well, that's an odd defense. I mean, they don't normally just whistle in the wind. They've usually got some reason to paper up your room. And if you're going to get away with it again, I don't know that that's makes you sound squeaky clean. It just makes you sound, like you said, very careful or good at it.
Right. Well, I don't remember him saying, I will get away with anything. That wouldn't be the language he uses. In fact, he doesn't talk about that kind of stuff. In fact, he says that he has absolutely no idea what the government is looking for.
Do you believe that?
I don't believe that. I mean, I'm sure he's heard through. I mean, he's got tremendous contacts.
How can he not know? Let me ask you this. I think that nobody should be in the city council for 45 years. I don't think anybody should be in the city council for 25 years. What do you think about
that? No, I definitely agree with that. I think there should be term limits. No. Not only the city council, but the mayoralty. I was in favor of the idea of giving a two-term limit to the mayor when it was being tried, you know, by Quinn to stop Emmanuel from running again. They don't need to be there that long.
But Walter Jacobson, in your op-ed piece, you are saying that you are reminding people of the good that Ed Burke has done, too.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I wanted to take a little bit of a contrary position on that, because the media has just been so rough on him, and I have been, too, in the past. But he has done some really good things. I mean, it's not as though Ed Burke is a bum. Ed Burke is a very clever, very good, in many ways, politician, and he has proposed, and in instances where he hasn't proposed but has supported, ordinances that have done wonderful things for the city that should be done.
Let me read the list. I can tell you some.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Give me a couple of instances.
Well, he's proposed and passed an ordinance that prohibits children from smoking, another ordinance that prohibits anybody from smoking inside anywhere except their private homes. He has stopped groceries from selling meats that have been treated with carbon monoxide in order to keep them fresh. I'll look at my list. He prohibits big restaurants from serving food that is cooked in unhealthy oils.
Texting while driving, he was behind that. Texting while driving, I believe he had a hand in that ordinance as well. So here's the last two sentences of your piece. You wrote, in critical ways, he's not just good for Chicago, he's necessary. Why do you say that?
Well,
necessary.
Because if he wants things that need to be passed that are viewed contrarily by most people in the city council.
Oh, yeah.
And they're
good. So you need somebody with some stamina, with some staying power in order to endure a sometimes unpopular position.
Right. And I also like to see someone like him, or if not him, someone else, challenge the establishment, of which he was a part, not so much anymore. So that's good. And he's just fabulously entertaining.
He's good copy, isn't he?
Right.
You can hear Walter Jacobson's commentaries on Steve Cochran's show, and we're always happy when he makes time to come in here, too. Nice to see you, Walter.
And I'm always happy to be invited. Thank you. It's great talking with you.
I just checked on it, Steve.
Your Spotify?
Yeah.
Yeah?
2:37 on WGN. This is John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio. I have a guest here, so I'm not going to dwell on it now, but I just got an email from Spotify. People are getting emails from Spotify.
Today's the day where they give you a summary of your year.
So they tell you how many songs you listen to.
Yeah, I haven't signed on, but without signing on, they tell you the songs, and I've listened to 2,283 different songs.
And they tell you which song you listen to the most.
Yeah, I haven't signed on there, but everyone's been talking about, you know,
your genre. Yeah, I listen to 1,335 different songs.
Rut.
I am shocked to hear that I listen to that many different songs on Spotify.
You guys use Spotify?
Yeah, we love the Spotify.
What's okay? Now we're old again. What's
no,
the matter?
No, it's not about being. I don't even have Spotify.
Oh,
like I type into YouTube a song I want to listen to.
I get that, but I mean,
no, because I mean Spotify is very convenient.
Oh yeah, what is it? You don't want to spend $9 a month? Is that it?
I didn't know you have to pay for it. I thought it was free.
Well, there's different versions. I'm not even sure. I think I'm paying.
I think you're paying for it if we're getting the report.
I just never have room on my phone, so I delete apps left and right. All I have left is text messaging.
I have it on my laptop, and I hook it up to a speaker, and then I've been playing a lot of Christmas music in the house. And I've made my files, my Christmas jazz file, my Christmas 2018 file.
And you like Spotify more than Pandora?
It's easy. Yeah, that's the one I'm using. I don't know that I dislike Pandora, but I'm just using Spotify.
It's fascinating, though. It's like doing your taxes and looking at your charges through the year.
Yeah, kind of.
Like my number one song was a Mark Knopfler song, and then Jason Mraz, Jonathan Goff.
You know, but cool. I'm afraid of what it's going to tell me.
Right.
Like, what if it's a song that I don't want to believe that I've that fully embraced? It's like, oh, no, it's a Barry Manilow song. What's the matter with me? That sort of thing.
I think it's time you know.
By the way, producer Elif brought Kimbra to our studio yesterday, the New Zealand singer-songwriter who could not have been more delightful in the studio and whose music videos are fantastic. And she's a Grammy Award winner, one of three from New Zealand, we learned. You went to her show last night, too.
Yeah, I did. And it was wonderful.
You know what the highlight for me was? You and I were kind of kidding beforehand. I said, I was teasing you because you were so jacked about Kimbra coming. And I said, oh, my God, Elif, what are you going to wear? And you go, I've been thinking about that. And then I started to think about it. And then, fortunately, I forgot about it. But you thought about it. When she walked into the studio, she looked at you and said, I love your outfit.
Yeah.
I'm like, thank you, Kimbra.
It was all worth it.
But you dress that way all the time. You've got a flair for fashion. So you went to her show last night. How was it?
It was really cool. So she was on this platform that was probably about a foot tall, and it was in the middle of the audience. So you could get as close to her as you wanted, and she made rounds around this square platform as she was singing. So she was singing to us, and one thing she said was, I planned this, and it's kind of scary, but you guys are a great crowd. And I thought, what does she mean by scary? Does she mean emotionally that she's spilling her heart through these really specific lyrics?
Sounds to me like it's the proximity to the crowd.
Or is it that?
Yeah.
Or is it the physical threat?
She said something else. Or you and she kind of made eye contact too, right?
Yeah, I think she recognized me because I was in the first row photographing, and you'll see it on Radio Elif on our website, by the way.
Radio Elif. By the way, so you then sent me a text of some of the video of her singing, and you said that at one point in the concert last night, she said, I met a guy named John, and he requested this song. I've added it to the playlist. I shared that with Brenda, and I go, look. I get to work, and you go, no, she didn't do that, you dope. I'm glad that worked out. Next time, thanks for keeping us hip and keeping it real.
Yeah, thanks for letting me join in on the conversation. That was really cool for me.
Dr. Michael Lossoff is a director of adolescent services at Yellow Brick. You've heard us talk about Yellow Brick in the past. It's a place in Evanston where they help, as we like to say, young people launch. If you know someone with an addictive personality or problem, maybe they've suffered trauma in their life, maybe they have some mental disorder, these people take those people and they help them live the kinds of lives you will hope they live. It's work. It's challenging. Sometimes you don't know what to do. They do at that place called Yellow Brick. And they hold seminars sometimes or group talk sessions. And Dr. Mike's on the phone. Michael, are you there? It's John Williams. How are you?
Good afternoon, John.
Is that a fair description? Go ahead.
I wonder if you compared the songs on your Spotify to those of a teenager, what you'd come up with.
I think that would be the moon. I think there'd be quite a distance between the two of us. Maybe that would be revealing if you told your patients. I don't need to tell you how to do your work, Doc, but what if you said, hey, young person, let's look at your Spotify list, and maybe that will reveal a little of where your head is. Any thought about that, Doctor?
I think you're right on target. And actually, a lot of times we'll listen to what our adolescents and young adults are listening to. It is a window into their world.
you're doing a seminar where you're talking about families that are getting together for the holidays and how to better communicate. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, we call it winter break dream or nightmare. You know, recognizing that it's a time when families are getting together with a lot of hope and expectations for a really wonderful time. But as always, and especially with teenagers, things might not always go completely wonderfully. So we wanted to have a conversation with parents about that experience.
So is the scene that you're imagining the kids coming home for Christmas from college, or maybe they've moved away, or is it just the nuclear family all living in the same house all the time?
Well, I think, you know, any of the above, you know, teenagers, high school kids, with a couple of weeks off, they don't have to go to school.
Yeah.
Right. You know, young adults coming home and, you know, families coming in town to celebrate with each other.
So what do you say? I mean, do you have a mistake we make or a starter piece of advice for families that are, you're right, spending more time now than usual?
Right. I mean, I think, you know, one of the most important themes for both teenagers and families in general is having realistic expectations. And I think this time of year is difficult for all of us because the messages we get from, you know, media, from Hallmark movies, from each other, is that Christmas and Hanukkah and the festive holidays all should be times of love and joy. And that is true, but life isn't always so completely, you know, simple. And so if things aren't going perfectly well, or if we're not feeling perfectly happy, we're set up to feel disappointed. And so I think, you know, a bottom line is to just be realistic about what you can expect and what's going to happen.
Yeah, and maybe that's the mistake some of us make. We try too hard, huh?
Yes, yes. And we get disappointed if things don't, you know, end up perfectly or everybody's not always fully happy.
You think that there are instances where we should exclude some family members from gatherings or, you know, sort of put a kibosh on maybe some topics? Any advice about that?
That's a good question. I think, you know, I think when we're with family members, especially if there's ones that we know there's going to be some tension or conflict about, we can ahead of time plan to limit our time with them or to make sure there's breaks. So, you know, having, you know, an aunt and uncle and their kids come to your home and spend all day, when you know there's going to be tension, might be difficult. Whereas if you plan some breaks or break up the time, that'd be a way to sort of moderate the tension. And then also, I think the holidays is not a good time to get into sort of deep level discussions about past conflict or, you know, about politics, if you know there's going to be political differences, because those are likely to sort of increase tension and frustration.
Remember last year when you...
Yeah, right. Don't try and settle old scores or bring up old things. Well, you guys did a seminar, that's what I called it, that I attended kind of as an observer, and I briefly introduced you all and myself. In the fall, and that was about, I'm trying to remember exactly, because it seemed to be somewhat wide-ranging, but it was talking to your kids at school time. Do you remember that one that I'm referencing?
Yes, yes, and I mean, that was wide-ranging, and it was to get a sense of what, you know, families are interested in. That was one important topic, is talking to your kids about school.
Yeah, well, but I got to tell you, I was impressed with how well that worked. Because these people don't know each other. You've got a room full of folks. Maybe a couple would show up, but it's really a room of strangers. And yet you all seem to make people open up and feel comfortable. There is a real sense of affirmation. And so if you think like this is a topic that you could benefit from a conversation about, my experience as an observer watching you guys do it is that you really do it well and that this can be surprisingly helpful. At least that was my call on it.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate you saying that, and I think, you know, we believe that you know, if you sort of introduce a topic and create a comfortable atmosphere, people want to talk about things they're experiencing, and they want to hear from each other and share what their experience is. So, yeah. You know, just a little bit of creating a comfort atmosphere really permits that kind of conversation to proceed.
Dr. Michael Lossoff is the Director of Adolescent Services at Yellowbrick, yellowbrickprogram.com. You can visit their website, find out more, and attend this free seminar. It's right. The date is December 10th, is that, Doc? Do you remember?
It's the 11th. It's next Tuesday.
Pardon me, at
7 p.m.
Still time to sign up there in Evanston. Nice to talk to you, Doctor. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
We've been talking about the good that some folks do, and Marisol is a recipient of the good services and graces of the people at the Salvation Army. I think she also works for them, too. Marisol, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
So we've got a virtual kettle, Marisol. We're trying to get to $30,000 this year. If you go to WGNradio.com on the John Williams page, you'll find my virtual kettle. And I'm asking people to make a donation there. How did the Salvation Army's services help you and your kids?
Well, I have to say, I want to share a little bit about my story. 2016 was a very challenging year, not only financially, but spiritually and emotionally. My husband and I, we lost our moms, and I lost my mom 3 weeks before my son was born. And I have to say that, you know, when you go through a situation like that, you feel lost. You need guidance. So I started looking for resources to get assistance. And then that's how I got connected with the Salvation Army in Norridge. And I have to say that they've been a blessing. I got connected with Pamela Church Pryor, who is my sister in Christ now, and I have to say that she supported me every step of the way. And when I say that, you know, basically the program, it's called the Pathway of Hope, and basically what they do is they assist you with whatever it is, so like food pantries, rental assistance, carnal payments, etc. You know, they're there basically to guide you.
So you guys were in a little bit of a financial crisis. You were emotionally down. I'm glad you even thought to turn to the Salvation Army. I'm glad they were there.
Yeah, they've been a blessing. And not only that, but we attend the church as well. And my girls go to the after-school program. So not only did, you know, they help me with the resources, but I've gained a family with them.
The program that you were involved in, too, was it a program to sort of help people get back on their feet, find a way to increase their income, become more self-sufficient?
Yeah, so basically what I would do, I would meet with Pamela. It would be maybe once a month, and basically we would talk about goals. So, for example, I was looking for a job. I wanted to get financially stable, things like that. And then within the month or two, you know, we would meet constantly, and then, you know, we would talk about what the progress was. What did I need to do to accomplish my goals?
One of the things you're doing now is helping out the Salvation Army. You work in their homeless shelter, right?
Yes, I work at the Shield of Hope, and it is a homeless shelter. So the Shield of Hope is an emergency stay up to 14 days for families with children under the age of 18. So basically what it is, you come to the Shield of Hope, and it's an emergency shelter. So basically what we do is we will find you placement into a more stable shelter. So
you know, when I think of, Marisol, when I think of homeless people who need assistance and get it, to be honest with you, I think of some poor man, usually, sometimes a woman living on the street who's an alcoholic or drug addict, but they're alone. I don't know how a family finds themselves homeless. Can you talk a little bit about who these people are?
Absolutely. So, you know, each family has a story, okay? And when you talk about homelessness, I mean, you know, it could be anybody. Today it's you, tomorrow it's me. And so things like that. So, for example, loss of a job, foreclosure, taking care of a family member who was, you know, helping, you know, with the income, family disputes, so getting kicked out because of a disagreement, domestic violence, things like that. So, like I said, every family has a story.
Well, you are paying it back. I mean, I know you've been a recipient of the services of the Army, but I know you're working with them, too. And none of that happens. You know, there's not a professional there to guide you and counsel you, that they don't get paid some sort of salary, and they offer that service to you at no charge. They hand out food to people at no charge. When the kids get their Christmas toys sometimes, they're not asking for payback on that. None of this happens without people making a donation to the Salvation Army, and our virtual kettle is at WGNradio.com. It's on the John Williams page, and let's help people like Marisol help others. Marisol, my best to you and your family at Christmas. Thanks for joining us, and good luck.
Thank you so much for having me.
Spotify users are getting their list of the songs they've listened to all year long and how many they listen to. YouTube's put out their list of the top five videos of the year, and one of them in the top five is one that we played on this show. The Boy at Walmart. Who yodels?
She said goodbye. Well, Lord, I thought I would cry. She do me, she do you. She's got that kind of loving. Lord, I'd love to hear when she comes to sleep.
Didn't you think that kid was terrific? He's got his cowboy boots on and hat, and he's positively adorable. And he can sing or yodel. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis, were you fans of that kid this year?
Oh, my God.
He's adorable. I still like it. So cute.
Everybody but Ro seems to be saying yes.
I am not in the yodel world.
I'm a good yodeler.
I'm sure. From the highest mountain in...
Yodelay.
Yeah.
Ooh, that wasn't bad.
That there's some talent there.
Was that you, Anna, or was
no,
that
was Violetta.
I played the little goat in The Sound of Music in 7th grade.
I think you should yodel one of your traffic reports for Rokan today.
I think he would not enjoy that, but just be my guess.
John, you produce your own show. I'll produce this one.
All right.
We'll be all right.
All right, I'm leaving now.
All
goodbye.
Right. Thank you, sir.